This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Columbia Network welcomes you to the Columbia Workshop. Tonight, the workshop spokesman is one of the stars of our play. We present the noted actress of stage and screen, Miss Isabel Jewell.
This is my first appearance on the Columbia Workshop, and I should like to tell you how it came about. A friend of mine, Mr. George Lloyd, a very gifted writer, came to me some months ago with the idea for the script we are going to present in a few moments. It is called Double Ugly. I was tremendously interested in the idea, and when I saw the completed radio play, I was more than excited about it. Mr. Lloyd and I asked ourselves where the best place in radio was to present a drama as unconventional as, I'm sure you'll agree, this one is. We decided there was one program where we would love to see it produced, the Columbia Workshop. And I am so happy to say that that is where it is being done tonight. Jim Backus will be heard as Matthew Eberman, and I am playing the part of Sally.
Thank you, Miss Jewell. The Columbia Workshop, directed by Perry Lafferty, presents Double Ugly.
A man named Eberman. Matthew Eberman, his name was. Had his name in the papers quite a lot, Matthew did. Kind of a funny story concerning Matthew, too. Had to do with murder. Matthew was an ugly guy. Ugly as a mud fence, and he hated that. He hated everyone telling him how ugly he was. Why, ever since he was a kid.
I won't play if I have to be Matthew's partner. He's so awful looking, it makes me sick to have to look at him with those terrible big hands. Well, I won't play, and I'll tell him so to his face. Matthew Eberman, you're the ugliest, crawliest, most horrible-looking boy I've ever seen. You're a double ugly. That's what you are. Look at you. Look at you. Double ugly, double ugly, double ugly.
And sometimes Matthew would cry. He'd go home and beat his big fists into his pillow and nearly choke, getting the sobs out of him.
Don't cry, Matthew. What do you care what they say? Friends don't matter unless they love you for yourself. Don't cry, Matthew. Mother loves you, and Mother thinks you're a wonderful boy. Oh, there, there now. Don't you cry.
And then Matthew wouldn't cry. It was a funny thing, too. He came from a good family, enough money, education. And if he hadn't been so his voice would have been kind of pleasant to listen to. One time, I remember he got along okay with just his voice. It was at a masquerade. Why he ever went, I don't know. Wanted to be with people, I guess. Anyway, he did go to the party and dance with all the girls in the place. And all the time, he kept hearing his mother's voice.
Why, I hardly know my own boy. All dressed up like that.
And one girl was so beautiful. Some lovely duchess, maybe from 100 or 200 years ago. Like a soft cloud of ruffles and notes. And a scent of magic clung all about her.
Oh, let's just here on the terrace. I'm quite out of breath.
I think I've never been so happy in all my life.
Oh, is that a compliment to me?
Yes. Yes, partly.
Partly? Oh, that's charming. Who are you?
I hardly know my own boy.
Our masquerade is so romantic. It's perfectly all right to fall in love with a stranger. Someone you haven't the slightest idea who it is.
Do you mind if I fall in love with you?
Well, it's a masquerade.
Then I will fall in love with you. I've never said it before. I love you.
Who are you?
I love you.
Well, who are you? I know it isn't quite time to remove our mask, but I'll tell you who I am if you'll tell me who you are.
In that costume, I hardly know my own voice.
Ladies and gentlemen, unmask!
Well, it doesn't matter now. Here, I'll take mine off first.
No.
Well, remove yours.
No.
Oh, you silly, you must. Come on, take it off. I'll take it off of you myself if you don't.
No. No. No.
Oh, but I will. I will. That's your enemy.
I don't care who knows it. I'll tell him to his face. Come.
Some lovely duchess. A soft cloud of lace and the scent of magic all about her.
Double ugly, double ugly, double.
Matthew's mother died, and Matthew went away from town. It was after that he had to do with murder. I told you about him as a boy, so maybe you could understand him later on. You see, he never knew a soul to talk to except some of the men who worked in the same plant where he did. He got a job there in this plant throwing sacks into a truck. At lunchtime, Matthew would listen to the other men talking. His big hands opening and closing regular.
You know what I think? I think it's better to be married, no matter what.
That's right, handsome. Still, lots of men don't get married.
That's right.
You ain't married, are you, Eberman?
No.
How come, Eberman?
I don't know.
I thought I'd never get married. I wasn't good looking. I thought women married only good looking men.
Shucks, Eberman. If a woman married me, one ought to marry you.
I never knew anyone to marry.
Listen to him, will you, handsome?
Say, that's good. I gotta tell that to the wife.
And that was right. He was kind of shy of women after that girl at the masquerade ball. The man named Handsome thought it all over and got his wife to invite Matthew to the house for supper one night.
This here is Eberman I was telling you about that don't know nobody to marry, Hazel.
Why, Mr. Eberman, ain't you ashamed? Well, there's lots of girls around that's dying to get married. Ain't you never wanted a home? Look at our little place. Ain't it cute? Man needs a woman's touch and vice versa.
Yeah, that's the truth, Eberman.
Sure, look at Handsome here, Mr. Eberman. He wasn't no use to himself at all alone. Now we got a real good life worked out.
Now, Hazel, don't force.
That's all right, let her talk.
Oh, I would anyways, Mr. Eberman. Handsome don't hold no water with me.
The fat wife talked and Matthew listened. And he began to wonder if maybe there wasn't something in what she said. Maybe he'd just grown up in the wrong kind of atmosphere. The girls he grew up with always...
Look at you, look at you!
No, still it was lonesome. He could quit the plant if he wanted. He had all that money his mother left him when she died. He only worked because it was so lonesome. Then Hazel said...
Well, now, let's see. Who'd be a good girl for you? What type do you go for?
Matthew couldn't say. That awful fat woman in the rocking chair, the sound of that squeaking. Maybe she'd give it up. But Hazel wasn't going to let him give it up. She was going to match him to somebody. Finally, she hit on just the girl.
I know. Sally Mason.
Sally Mason, a big, easygoing blonde. Like a soft cloud of ruffles and lace and the scent of magic. No, that's getting it mixed up. Sally wore a white dress and Sally did most of the talking. You see, Hazel arranged for them to meet at a party at her house. She had all the men and their wives from the plant, and a guy named Lefty played the piano. Played piano like old-time movies. Everybody had a swell time except Matthew. He sat alone over in one corner of the porch. He heard the screen door open and close, and a big bunch of white that was Sally moved over to him.
My dear, you are, Mr. Eberman. What do you mean by running away from the party? I'm your girl tonight, ain't I?
Sure. But I thought maybe you wanted to be with some of those fellas that talk more. I'm pretty quiet.
Oh, I don't mind. I think that's the mark of a gentleman. You ain't so much like these ginks around here. Gorgeous night, ain't it? I think nature's just about the grandest thing in the world, don't you? Trees and flowers and all. Ain't so many flowers around here, though. I like sunshine and clean scenery all around, don't you? I get so lonesome here. It's lonesome for a girl. That is, of course, if you ain't married.
I get lonesome, too.
You do? Well, I never thought men got lonesome. I thought it was only girls. Men can get out.
I get lonesome.
Oh, sure. I remember now. Hazel told me. You're afraid you're too ugly looking.
What are you laughing at? I do get lonesome, and that's the reason. Only you're not to laugh.
Don't. You're hurting my arm. I'll bet it's all right now. I wasn't laughing, except it's funny to think of a man being so... Well, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I'm lonesome too, ain't I? You got the biggest hands I ever seen. Do you think I'm pretty? Do you? I get so lonesome.
Matthew couldn't get it out of his head about this funny girl. Do you think I'm pretty? He didn't even know. He couldn't even remember what she looked like when he went to work the next day.
Ain't so many flowers around here, though.
He heard her saying those things to him all over again. What did she look like, though? He threw some more sacks into the truck. When he started to get his lunch, there was something over by the gate he had never noticed before. Something pink and fresh. His big hands opened and closed.
Hi there, Mr. Everman.
It was Sally, all in pink organdy, like a gas balloon at a children's party.
I guess you're surprised to see me, ain't you, Mr. Everman?
I guess I am.
Well, I thought maybe you might like a little home-fixed lunch. Don't it look good? We can eat over there in the shade if you don't mind having a lady as company. Come on. I was all alone today, and that's why I come. Looky here. I even got some chocolate creams for Aster. Do you like them?
Uh-huh.
I do myself. Isn't this a cute bracelet? Little tiny bells. Must be hard work to make a thing like that, don't you think? Have some of these sandwiches, Mr. Everman. They're gorgeous.
Sally chatted away, all in pink, and self-consciously turned her wrist to make the little bells tinkle. Matthew ate steadily and silently. Big, thick sandwich.
Just like a party, ain't it?
After a while, it was time to go back to work. Matthew stood up and didn't know what to say, just looked. Sally's face was kind of shiny from the heat, and the pink had gone limp and bunched. But a breeze picked up the loose strands of her hair, and her foot twisted like a little girl's.
I'm glad I come.
Me too.
You know, you never called me by name. It's Sally.
I know.
Call me by name. I like being called by name.
I will.
Well, can't you do it now? It won't hurt none.
I've got to go back to work.
Okay. So long.
So long. You look pretty in pink.
Why, say, I'm glad you like it. It's one of my favorite colors.
But Matthew had gone back to work. After that day, Matthew saw her often. It was funny how she seemed to like him. That bracelet was the only thing. Sometimes he felt he could... What about those pictures in the paper? Now he swung the sacks into the truck faster and seemed glad to hear the whistle blow in the evening.
How's things, Everman?
Fine.
How's Sally?
All right, I guess.
You ain't planning to take the fatal step, are you? What did I tell you? No guy is too ugly to get a woman if they find the right one. Hey, what's your hurry?
The men and their wives at the plant watched the romance develop.
Gonna get hitched, Mr. Everman?
It's better to get married no matter what.
No matter what. Matthew never asked Sally to marry him until the day he saw her out by the fence where she lived talking to Lefty, the man who had played the piano at Handsome's party the first night they met. He saw Lefty pinch her cheek and heard Sally laugh.
Oh, Lefty, you say the silliest thing. You can't expect a girl to take you serious. Oh, now there, don't. Stop that. Oh, Lefty, you're terrible.
Take your hands off her.
Oh, Matthew, look what you've done to Lefty. You knocked him out cold.
You're not to fool around with guys like that. I don't like the woman I'm going to marry. Fooling around with guys like that.
Marry? Oh, Matthew. Why, that's the one thing in the whole wide world I always wanted to be.
And all the men and their wives stood in the church. And the wives thought the bride looked prettier than any they'd ever seen. Matthew took his bride to Niagara.
How's married life, Sally?
Say, it's the grandest thing. You should come and see us. Pay a social call.
Yeah, I hear you got a nice little place to live.
Yeah, flowers and a tree. Oh, you gotta come and see it.
And the men and their wives at the plant did come and see it. They sat around the house and put their feet on things and spilled cigar ashes on the floor and talked loud and common. Matthew didn't say a word. Just sat and listened and looked at the mess they made. They stayed a long time, and Matthew thought they would never go.
Well, now you know the way. Don't be strangers.
Don't worry.
We'll be back real often. Now we know the way.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
See you soon. Good night.
Matthew, look at the rugs and the footmarks on the chair. The place looked ugly.
Imagine entertaining folks in your very own home.
They won't come again.
Why not?
Look at the rug.
Oh, that ain't nothing. I'll just run the sweeper.
They're not coming again.
But a house ain't nothing without folks coming in.
We got each other.
Well, yes, but I...
They never had another party. Maybe Matthew saw his face in the ashes on the floor. The house grew quiet, and Sally got nervous.
It's just that we sit here and don't say a word, Matthew. I get lonesome. Can't we have a party? Or why can't we go to other people's parties? Can't we do that?
And the yard grew up in weeds, and the flowers didn't do so well. The tree didn't grow. Even the smoke from the plant seemed to find its way over to the house. The white got gray, and it got black. Splotches. The paint peeled. Matthew lived. Sally put on weight.
Matthew, see the pretty pink ribbon I got to match my hair? The lady at the dime store said blonde hair got awful dingy looking, so I got this bottle of stuff. Only a dime, and look how it brightens up the color of my hair. Have a chocolate cream, Matthew. These creams come from the dime store, too. I can't even notice the difference from the ones you used to buy me.
He walked away. He always walked away. He wanted to tell Sally how much he wanted to be close to her, but he couldn't. She filled the house with frilly things and all the fussy doodads that go with...
You just won't believe what I got to show you, Matthew. It's like a movie actress I've seen in a magazine. Look, a little laptop. Just like a little ball of her, ain't it? Well, my angel, ain't you the sweetest thing? Would you like a chocolate cream like Mommy? Oh, Matthew, ain't he a scream? Look at him eat those creams. Oh, they're delicious, ain't they, Angel? No, Mama's little angel mustn't talk. What is it? What's the matter, darling?
Matthew walked away.
What's the canaries jump on their perch, Matthew? I don't understand them birds, Matthew. They don't sing a song like canaries is supposed to. Oh, you bad boy. Scaring a little sister. I just won't talk to you again. Aw, now don't make that funny face at Mama. Mama didn't mean to hurt her feelings. Oh, Matthew, ain't it a scream? Here, darling, we'll divide a chocolate cream. Oh, now don't mess Mama all up. Oh, look at that, Matthew. All down my negligee. Now you just go and sit on your papa's lap. Now wouldn't you like to sit on papa's lap, Matthew? I love you. You hit him. Oh, Matthew, don't do that way. Matthew.
What are you crying for, Sally?
You shouldn't have hit him. Look at him. Don't you cry, Angel. And Mama won't either. Not Matthew. He's just like a kid, ain't he?
Double ugly, double ugly.
I think maybe kids would make it not so long.
Double ugly, double ugly.
No. Matthew got up and went out of the house and walked. He walked, and he wished he could get it all straight in his mind. Nothing was happening the way he wanted it to. Why couldn't he make the little house behave the way he'd thought of it a long time before? Like when he thought how nice it would be to get Sally a house, flowers and trees. Why hadn't the flowers grown?
I like the house, but I get lonesome.
Lonesome in your own home? Why go to those awful parties with ashes and footmarks on the chair and men with their arms around Sally? She shouldn't have allowed that. She belonged to him. She was the only person who ever belonged to him. Hadn't she come to the plant yard that day? Sure she had. She liked him. She didn't think he was so ugly.
Sure, I remember. You're the one who was afraid you're too ugly.
But Sally just laughed. She didn't seem to mind at all. She belonged to him and nobody else. That Lefty, pinching her cheek and laughing at him. She shouldn't have allowed that. She shouldn't be singing that song the Lefty plays. She should stop. He wanted to love her and make her understand that she was all he ever had.
Mama's little angel. Want a chocolate cream?
He wanted to leave that dog alone. Why couldn't she treat him like that? The dog ate chocolate cream, two pictures in the paper. No, wait. No, that's getting the story mixed up. That's getting ahead, and that would ruin the story. Listen to those hammers. Those carpenter boys sure know what to do with hammers. Yes, sir. Matthew. you walked back to the house. Too bad about the paint and the smoke that came over so far from the plant and the weeds all around. He was surprised to see the tree look bigger. Maybe he hadn't noticed the tree for a long time. The little house looked so lonesome, all cluttered up and lost in the weeds. Yes.
Where have you been, Matthew?
Walking.
Oh.
He looked at her. Where was that pink, fresh thing he had seen before at the plant? The shining face from the heat and the loose strands of hair caught in the breeze.
You never called me by name. I like being called by name.
A big, fat, blonde lump.
These creams come from the dime store and you can't even tell the difference.
The way they got smeared down her negligee. She didn't even seem to care. Where was that pink and fresh thing by the gate? Sally was standing by the canary cage and wiggling her wrist again. She hadn't done that for a long time, since Niagara Falls.
Look, Matthew, I found that bracelet with the bells on it. I thought it might make the canary sing. Come on, Bertie. Do you think they're sick, Matthew? I've never seen them so quiet before. Listen to the bells, Bertie.
Matthew's hands were opening and closing at his sides, like they were grasping for something to hold and never find him.
I don't understand them birds at all.
You've gotten fat, Sally.
Oh, it don't matter. I don't care. Nobody cares if married women get fat. That's what Hazel says. I like Hazel. She's good company. I don't get down her way much now, though. My ankles swell up. It's from these French heels. Ain't they the cute shoes, though, Matthew? Make the foot look small. My ankles swell up, but they do make the foot look small. My wrists swell up, too. I don't know what's wrong with them. Oh, I wish I could get these birds to sing. Oh, I'm bored.
Bored? So that was it. She wasn't happy in the little house anymore. What did she have to get bored for? He wanted her to love the little house, but she got bored.
Can we ever go out, Matthew? Or have someone in? Hazel is having a party. Can't we go? Gee whiz, all we do is to sit here. Can't we go, Matthew? Can't we?
Aren't you happy with me, Sally?
Yeah, but we never do anything. I get crazy here all the time. I just get so I can't stay still another minute or I'll scream. If we had some kids, well, then maybe we'd mean more to each other. Have something to talk to each other about. Kids is awful good company, and conversation about kids is good company, and good talk between a man and his wife.
Matthew wanted to run. He wanted to kick walls, tear the house down, anything. There she was singing that song, Lefty's song, on the piano. It wasn't good for her to sing. And there was that dog barking again and eating great big dishes of chocolate cream.
Mama's little angel mustn't bark.
Oh, where was that terrace he'd seen once upon a time? Some lovely duchess. Maybe from 100 or 200 years ago.
I hardly know my own boy.
Oh, now there's no reason you can't tell me who you are. Your mask. I'll do it for you. Look at you.
Maybe if he grabbed Sally and held her close, that would make a difference.
You're the ugliest, curliest boy I've ever seen.
Matthew Everman.
Why did it have to turn out this way? They said a man ought to be married no matter what.
No matter what, no matter what, no matter what.
I think Adrian's the grandest thing in the world, don't you?
No matter what, no matter what, no matter what.
I feel so lonesome. If we had kids, we'd mean more to each other.
Devil ugly, devil ugly.
Can't we go out? Can't we go? Why can't we go, Matthew?
Only he could stop all that noise. If he could just get a minute to think. Think without all that noise. Then he could get it straight. He had to have quiet. Sally was so fat. Matthew stuffed his mouth full of dime store chocolates, one after another, one after the other, one after the other, and the whole room began to turn. Matthew ate chocolate. He remembered the blonde Sally with her eyes and her mouth wide open, singing Rusty's song, or was it the noise the room made going around?
Matthew!
I hardly know my own
A big, fat, blonde lump all covered in pink and a bow to match in her hair.
Matthew!
And the dog were quiet.
Matthew, they was like kids to me. Little helpless babies. And just look at your hands. All red and wet. You look so ugly.
That big blonde was as still as could be, except her wrist. But her face hated him. She said he was ugly, ugly. This wouldn't be like the house they'd planned anymore. No trees, no flowers, that bracelet. That fat blonde hating him wasn't the woman he married. What was she doing there? She was bored. She wanted to go.
Can't you even say you're sorry? Matthew, don't do like that with your hands. No, I don't want you near me.
You've got those awful hands of yours all over my negligee. Matthew, put your hands down. No, no.
Head against the floor with his big hands. Again and again.
Read all about it. Extra paper.
Hang by your neck until you are dead.
Those carpenter boys sure know what to do with their hammers. Listen. I guess they're getting ready for in the morning. Cutting down a tree to build a thing like that. Well, that's the story of Matthew Eberman, I guess. There's just one thing I'd like to ask you, just in case you print any of what I told you.
Sure. Anything you want. What can we do for you?
Only put my name in anything you print, that's all. I'd just like to think only my name is going to be in print, that's all. You know what my name is, don't you?
Sure.
Sure you do, that's right. But Eberman, Matthew Eberman, that's my name. I guess maybe you wonder how I could tell you all this. Like I was talking about somebody else. It's because Matthew Eberman was never a person I really wanted to be. It was somebody I knew and didn't like, and I hated him. Just like everybody else did. Because he was ugly. That's no excuse for what he did. Poor Matthew. Hating makes so many lonely people. And it makes ugly people, too. Ugly and mean on the inside. I guess the best thing would be if everybody were friendly and understanding. Wouldn't it be a nice world if people were? But pictures in the papers. There won't be any pictures in the papers, will there? No pictures! No pictures!
Columbia Workshop has presented Double Ugly, written by George Lloyd, directed by Perry Lafferty, and starring Isabel Jewell as Sally and Jim Backus as Matthew Eberman and the narrator. The special musical score was composed and conducted by Van Cleve. The cast included Warner Paul as Hazel, Eddie O'Shea as Handsome, Betty Jane Tyler as the little girl, Sammy Hill as the Duchess, Jeanette Chinley as the mother, and Ed Mayhoff and Brad Barker. Sound was by Charles Range, Jerry Sullivan, and Phil Airhorn. Al DiCaprio engineered. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Johnny presents the Philip Morris Playhouse. Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Vincent Price. Vincent Price as star, we bring you Murder Needs an Artist, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
So you see, D.A., the case just sort of dropped in our laps. Oh, excuse me, you want a cigarette?
Thanks. You said over the phone there was a confession.
Oh, yeah. Gorgody took it down only about a half hour ago. Yeah, have a look.
George Aloysius Hilton. Who is he, you know?
Oh, a writer of some kind. Never saw him on any bestseller list, but he had imagination on it. Go on, read it. You see what I mean.
The whole thing began less than 2 months ago while I was working on a new novel. It was to be about the gutter life of New York, but somehow it lacked believability. In desperation, I hit on the idea of spending several days in the typical Bowery flophouse.
I put on my shabbiest suit, locked my apartment, and decided on the Ritz Arms. 15 cents a night. It was a big room with one high window and cots lining all four walls. There weren't any sheets or blankets on the beds. Only moth-eaten threadbare mattresses and a heavy whiskey odor permeated the room. When I came to cot number 13, the cot I'd been assigned, I saw it already had an occupant. Oh, excuse me, but I think this is my cot.
What's that? What's that you say?
This cot. There seems to be some mistake.
Oh, no. There's no mistake. She's dead. She's been dead 20 years. If she weren't, do you think I'd be in a place like this?
I'm afraid you don't understand.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry I can't offer you anything, but you see, this is my butler's night off, and, well, I never was much good at mixing a martini. You'll excuse me, won't you? You must come again soon. It's been very nice chatting with you. Very nice.
I took another cot nearby. Oh, this was great. My first 5 minutes in this place, and I had already discovered a character. I had just taken out my notebook and pencil to jot down an idea when somebody on the cot next to mine began coughing, and I turned my head. It was Grace, Christopher Grayson. And yet it couldn't. I sat there absolutely paralyzed. It was insane, impossible. Grayson was dead. He died 6 years ago. Grayson.
Well, what did you say?
Who are you?
Who am I? That is something I would like to know myself.
You are, Grayson.
My dear sir, for a drink I will be anybody you say. How about it, huh? Doesn't have to be a big drink. Just a little drink so high, huh? If you don't, I'll commit suicide, huh? I'll jump right through that window.
Was pointing at a solid wall. I gave him a dollar bill and he collapsed into an ecstatic stupor. He looked exactly like Grace. Of course, I'd only met him a few times at parties, but his was a face you didn't forget. But it couldn't be. I sat down on my cot and thought of Grayson. Grayson, who'd slaved at his canvases all his life without making a penny and then burned to death in a cheap hotel room with his paintings all around him. Grayson, whose work was fabulous now. Another genius recognized too late. Suddenly the Ritz Arms became very depressing. And then I saw them. Under his cot, I saw them, the half-crumpled sheets of paper. I picked them up. They were sketches, penciled, rough drafts for paintings. Rough drafts that proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that this derelict was Christopher Grayson. I bent over him and shook him hard.
Yeah, leave me alone. Oh, it's you. You gave me this dollar.
Yes, but never mind that now. These sketches, did you do them?
Oh, what if I did?
They're good. You studied somewhere. You must have. Don't you remember where?
I remember only brands of beer.
And look, try to think. Have you ever painted with oils?
Oils? I haven't touched oil since...
Yes, go ahead.
It's funny, I don't know why I said that. Things like that just come to me sometimes, especially when I haven't had a drink. I think I'll go outside and get a drink right now.
No, wait a minute. Don't go. I just got an idea.
Eh?
Look, how would you like to have a drink anytime you wanted?
Are you kidding?
No, I mean it. How would you like a scotch and soda or a straight rye or a brandy?
Stop it! What are you trying to do to me?
Look, it's yours if you'll come with me.
Quiet. I'm trying to get my rest.
Look, maybe I'm not quite bright, but why this sudden interest in me?
Well, you see, I'm a writer.
Oh.
Yes, I'm doing a book on the Bowery, and I thought maybe...
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You want to use me as a subject?
Well,
eh?
No, not exactly.
You want to take me like you would a filthy little germ, stick me under a microscope to see what makes me tick. Well, don't you?
Look, I'm sorry if I've offended you.
Offended me?
Oh, no, 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 no. You've only insulted my human dignity, that's all. I'll take the job. I'll do anything for a drink. I sunk that low.
Grayson spent the night with me in my rooms, a bottle in his lap. Early the next morning, while he was still out cold, I made some purchases at Hobart's Art Supply Center off 3rd Avenue.
Will that be all, sir?
Yes, yes, I think so. How much is that?
Oh, well, let me see. One easel, oils, canvases, brushes, $64.92.
Well, here you are.
Hilton, well, don't tell me you've taken a painting.
Oh, Myers. And what if I am? Any objections?
No, none whatever. As a matter of fact, it seems like a prudent move on your part, George. You read the Chronicle, Carruthers' review of your last, you'll pardon the expression, novel.
I always make it a point to avoid dull reading.
But the Chronicle's readers aren't so discriminating. And after all, Carruthers is on the board of the Novel of the Month Club. That's not good, George. That's not good.
One of these days, somebody's going to get fed up with your smug little innuendos, and the Chronicle would be minus one art editor.
That a threat, George.
Call it a warning.
Excuse me, sir, but your change.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Well, it's been nice seeing you, George. Oh, and good luck in your new career. No, seriously, who knows? You may be America's next Christopher Grayson.
I could have throttled him where he stood. Not only because, like so many other stupid people, he couldn't understand my books. No, I hated him even more because of Carol. You see, we were both after the same woman. When I got back to the apartment, Grayson was still asleep. I unwrapped the materials I'd bought and set them carefully in the next room where he could easily bump into them. And then I woke him up.
Oh, where is this? Who are you?
I'm George Hilton. Remember, I picked you up yesterday in a Bowery flophouse. This is my place.
Ah, yes, I remember now. Oh, what a head.
I've got to step out for a little while, but make yourself at home. Wash up, raid the icebox. I'll dissect you later.
Huh?
Oh, we made a bargain yesterday. You were to tell me all about life in flophouses, and I was going to stand your living expenses.
Well, a bargain's a bargain, I always say. Oh, bring back another bottle of this stuff here, will you? It packs a beautiful wallop.
I purposely stayed away over 2 hours. This was the acid test. A real artist never forgets. His technique remains part of him always, like a passion for a beautiful woman. That's how it was with Grayson. When I returned, he was mixing oils. He'd already drawn some preliminary lines, and there was a feverish gleam in his eyes, as if he'd just been reunited with the one thing in the world he loved. Then he saw me and stopped.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself. When I saw these, I was just like sleepwalking. I can't explain it. It just happened. Well, I guess I've ruined your canvas.
Ruined? Why, you're making it come to life. Say, go ahead, finish it. You know what they say about mental associations? Well, maybe your memory will come back to you.
I can keep painting you. You don't mind?
Mind? No, I don't mind. A week passed. In between brandies, he was painting more and more. I knew that soon now he would actually complete a picture. There must have been something in my voice, because when I called Carol up, she said,
George, you sound like the cat that swallowed the canary. What's up?
Something big, Carol. I can't tell you what just yet, but
my, how mysterious can we get?
If it comes out right, you'll get all the things I've always wanted to give you.
Really? Am I to suppose a rich aunt is dying and you have great expectations?
Oh, look, why must you all... Can't you ever take me seriously?
Sorry, darling.
If you must know, I'm expecting money from...
Yeah?
From another source.
Oh, George, another novel. No offense, you're a marvelous writer, darling. It's just that you don't seem to give the public what it likes.
What the publishers think it likes, you mean.
Well, they're the ones who pay you, aren't they? George, darling, you're simply... Oh, hello, darling.
Hello, sweet.
George, I'll have to ring off now. Teddy Myers is here. We're off to Gypsy's for Spanish food.
Goodbye.
Days later, Grayson's picture was done. I don't think any picture was ever finished quite the same way. Two brush strokes and a drink. Two more brush strokes and another drink. That was about the temple. I held it in my hands. It was the real article, all right. Then suddenly I noticed, down in the corner, down in the right-hand corner, were the initials CG.
What happened to that bottle of scotch? What happened, I said?
Never mind the scotch.
Oh, I see. It's on the... Hey, let go of me.
Not until you explain this.
Explain? What are you talking about?
These initials. Why did you put in these initials?
Initials? What do you mean, initials, initials? I don't see any... What do you know? I wonder why I did that.
Stood there swaying. Then all of a sudden, the brush dropped out of his hand and he slid to the floor, passed out, drunk. But I knew now I had to get him to work faster. I had to have more paintings before he regained his memory. When I had them, well, he had risen from the dead like Lazarus. He'd be dead again soon. This time he would stay that way, and I'd be rich.
You have heard Act One of Murder Needs an Artist, starring Vincent Price. Now, Vincent Price in Act Two of Murder Needs an Artist, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
Several days later, I paid Maggots a visit. He was the biggest art dealer in town. But I can still remember the look on his face when he unwrapped the package I'd brought with me.
This painting. Where did you get this painting?
Well, I bought it from Grayson 6 years ago, just before his death. He sold me a number of paintings. You like it?
Like it? It's madness.
One of the best, I'd say.
Well, not exactly. I mean, there is some careless brushwork here and there, but the subject matter... This is a new Grayson. Grayson the morbid, the decadent. Grayson the post-impressionist.
How much?
Oh, how can you talk about money at a time like this? It's superb. $4,000.
What do you think I am, a fool?
Well, $10,000.
Oh, you're joking. Why, even the publicity's worth that much, do you?
Well, I'll give you $15,000, no more. Provided, of course, you give me first option on any others you have.
$20,000 or I go somewhere else.
Oh, all right, but... When can I see the others?
In due time, Maggot. In due time. The next day, it was all in the papers. On Sunday, Ted Myers wrote a learned dissertation on the social significance of Grayson's last period and how Grayson symbolized the frustration of the 20th century. Myers, always so sure of himself, always so condescending... And, not more than a few hours after Meyer's column hit the newsstands, I heard from Carol.
Darling, I've been reading all about it. Why on earth didn't you tell me?
I tried to, Carol, but you wouldn't listen, remember?
Oh, but, George, I didn't dream. I thought it was just another impractical scheme. Look, darling, why don't you drop by my apartment tonight? Say about 8? I'll be alone. We can talk.
I'll be there.
Don't be late, then. Bye, darling.
Money. Now that I had money, Carol was mine. I knew that. She wormed a diamond bracelet out of me that evening. At least I promised to get her one. She never even once mentioned Teddy. All the next week, I let Grayson pretty much alone. He painted like a madman, a strange, almost crafty look in his eyes. He was interested in nothing but his painting and his bottle. But it was getting to be a race against time.
Murder in the cabin. Murder in the cabin.
What's that?
Murder in the cabin. I don't know. It's a title or something.
Why do you think it's a title?
I don't know why. Doesn't mean anything, but I...
But what?
Well, somehow I'm sure it has something to do with me. My past, I mean.
You see what I mean now by A Race Against Time? Murder in the Cabin was one of his most famous paintings. Every day now he said things like that, recalled things that convinced me he was regaining his memory. I couldn't take chances now. So I rented a cabin in the Catskills and drove up with Grayson. We got moved in, and then after a few days, I left him there, locked in, and came back to town to get some clothes I'd left in the apartment.
Hello, George.
Myers.
Aren't you going to let me in?
What do you want?
Calm, calm. That's no way to talk to a friend who's about to save you from a prison sentence. That's better.
What are you talking about?
Nice place you have here, George. A bit bourgeois, but... nice chair, too. Comfortable.
Get to the point.
By all means. George, it pains me to say this, but you are a liar, a kidnapper, and a thief.
Get out of here.
When I saw you buying art equipment, I thought it strange that a man who's always expressed his aversion to painting should suddenly undergo a change of heart.
You thought it strange, well...
Yes, I merely thought it strange. However, when you foisted a Grayson on Maggard 4 weeks ago, I became suspicious. So for the past week, I've been, to put it crudely, shadowing.
Myers, you...
Now, I could have given you away the other morning, after I saw you leave that cabin of the Catskills. After I looked in at the window and saw Christopher Grayson.
How much do you want?
Well, cash doesn't interest me, George. I want to be your partner.
I don't understand.
You have a clever little scheme, George. Clever. It has distinct possibilities.
Yes, but not very much longer. Grayson's recovering his memory.
Oh, he has amnesia?
Yes, yes, but it's only a matter of time before he finds out who he is.
No, we have to work fast. How many pictures has he done?
Five. Look, but see here, I haven't...
My dear fellow, you have no choice. As for our little past differences, well, let's let bygones be bygones, huh?
Yes. Why not?
That's the attitude.
Two heads are better than one, they say.
Of course. Oh, I want to meet Grayson, George. Shall we drive up to your cabin? My car's outside.
All right. Just as soon as I get out some sherry, we ought to drink to our new friendship.
Splendid, George. You know, I have the feeling this is going to be a long and fruitful association. In fact, I have the perfect name for us. Christopher Grayson Incorporated. A little cold. Sherry should fix me up.
Yes, it should. Better take it easy around those corners.
Not afraid, are you, George?
No, but...
That's the trouble with you, George. You lack backbone.
There's such a thing as recklessness. Well, for instance, weren't you afraid I might kill you when you came to blackmail me?
You kill me? No, you're just not the type, George.
I'm not?
No. Oh, you might be capable of jaywalking or even shoplifting, but murder...
What's the matter? Are you getting sleepy?
Oh, I can't understand it. I had 10 hours sleep last night.
Easy now. Just let's get over to the side of the road here. It's all right. Relax. That's it. Then I'll take the wheel.
Oh, it's all right. I just... thanks, you can take the wheel.
I'd stopped the car just on the edge. The drop off the mountain was a good 2,000 feet. Myers was still slumped against the steering wheel. The sleeping powder I'd emptied into his sherry was working perfectly. I got out of the car quickly. I looked up and down the road, no cars in sight. I propped Myers up behind the wheel. Then I started the car. And just as it reached the edge, I jumped clear. Better than I'd expected. The car burst into flames. I stood there watching it, thinking I'd never hear his mocking laugh again. More important, Christopher Grayson Incorporated had only one stockholder again.
you all day. I called you twice. No one answered the phone.
Well, I was out, darling. I saw my publishers. They like the publicity I've been getting. They want another book.
Oh, dearest, that's wonderful. Would you like to kiss me now or later?
Hmm? Oh, Carol, I love you. Beyond words. We'll be happy together. We must. We'll go away somewhere, somewhere far away.
The Riviera? Monte Carlo?
Anywhere you say. I'll sell the rest of the paintings tomorrow. Then we'll go away. The next day I sold them all. Maggard fondled them like an ecstatic lover. As for me, the check for $100,000 felt very, very good. Thursday morning, I cashed it. Then after reserving two tickets on the plane for Rio, I drove up to the cabin, the money under the front seat. I reached the cabin about 2:00. I unlocked the door slowly. Grayson was on the cot. He was staring right at me, the drunken, stupid fool. I raised my gun. I took careful aim.
Well, D.A., quite a case, huh?
I should say. Ingenious fellow, this Hilton. How'd you catch him?
We didn't.
I don't get it.
You see, D.A., it's my theory that 6 years ago, Grayson staged his own death with his wife's help.
What?
He took out a $25,000 insurance policy, then disappeared. We know that. The burning could have been faked, some derelict, maybe.
Now, wait a minute. How about his wife's suicide?
Yeah, she could have been murdered.
Murdered?
That's right, by Grayson. Decided to grab all the insurance money for himself, killed her, forged the suicide note.
But what about his amnesia?
Amnesia? What amnesia? Hilton thought he was using Grayson. Well, actually, the shoe was on the other foot.
Hmm. Imagine how Grayson must have felt. He'd become famous, but after he was dead. By this time, his money was gone.
Yeah, after all, 6 years of living, wine, women. Maybe he was even robbed, who knows. Anyway, he couldn't show up.
Sure, he might have a murder rap pinned on him.
That's right. Now, Maggard called us this afternoon and said that he'd been swindled. The paint wasn't 6 years old under microscopic examination. So, we traced Hilton to his Catskills cabin.
And?
And we nabbed Grayson, making a getaway with a gun and $100,000 in his pocket. Hilton was inside with three slugs in him. Lived 20 minutes.
Hmm. Murder in the cabin.
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented Murder Needs an Artist, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Our star, Vincent Price, will be back in a moment for a curtain call.
Tonight should have seemed like typecasting to you, Mr. Price, what with the time you spend in real life in the art world.
It certainly did, Johnny. I felt right at home. Tell me, what's this I hear about Coronet Magazine's June issue, which will tell everyone about your Philip Morris Playhouse?
Well, Coronet is giving us a nice write-up and calls our producer, Bill Spear, the maestro of the mic. How about that?
Well, I must see that. And in the meanwhile, who's to be your guest next week, Johnny?
Howard Duff, the Sam Spade of the mic, who's going to be chased for a change. But before you go, Mr. Price, may I present you with this carton of Philip Morris cigarettes. And thank you again for another exciting evening.
Thank you, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Price.
Now goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Howard Duff. Until then... Vincent Price will soon be seen in Curtain Call at Cactus Creek, a Universal International Technicolor production. Tonight's original radio play was by Alec Chorney and John Hobbish. Music on the Philip Morris Playhouse is under the direction of Lud Gluskin.
All names and characters used on this program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is Art Ballinger saying goodnight for Philip Morris. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.